Please be aware the following interview discusses abuse and traumatic experiences which some listeners may find distressing.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. With disabled people at least three times more likely to experience abuse, new research from Vision Foundation and Safe Lives found that at least 1 in 12 visually impaired people in the UK is estimated to be a victim or survivor of domestic abuse. Now, today we are speaking with Saliha Rashid, who is blind herself and is a survivor and campaigner for gender-based abuse with a particular interest around disability. It is really nice speaking with you today, Saliha.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Saliha, could you tell us a little bit about your experience?
I was born blind and I am completely blind with no vision. I come from a community that operates an honour system, which means that when I was growing up, particularly in my teenage years, everything in my life was under constant control and monitoring. And this included basic things such as the time I went to bed, the books that I read, the friends that I had. As I grew older, I wasn't allowed to go on school trips. I was always told that because I am blind and a woman, I couldn't have high aspirations or be independent. And I wanted to go away from home to university. I wanted to live independently. And I was told that I couldn't do that.
What made you first realize that you are experiencing a form of abuse?
I think that I saw other people who were blind and visually impaired, who were leading independent lives, who were living on their own, were working, and just had that level of independence. And that's when I knew that actually this is what I wanted and that I couldn't have it. I wouldn't say this is specific to my culture. There are many cultures and communities that see disabled people as less able.
You describe yourself as a survivor. So what was the catalyst that eventually led you to reach out for help?
I think it was my determination that, you know, I wanted to be independent and I wanted to do well. And I think I always had that. It took me three attempts to leave behind my abusive situation. And the first time I left, I was 16, and I went into a women's refuge for just under a week. And I returned back because the support just wasn't there. There was just no awareness of issues around gender-based abuse and also how that would impact me as a visually impaired person. And then 2 years later, I left again and stayed with a family member. But again, I went back because that support from services just wasn't there. And then in 2011, I started my university degree and the restrictions on me kind of increased. So I had to show my university timetable, account for every minute that I was out of the house. And something inside of me said, no, you know, there's more for me than this. And so in April 2012, I left for the last time.
It mustn't have been easy to take those steps. And I know you said you had three attempts there, but what would you say was the hardest thing about leaving? Were there specific barriers you faced there?
I think there were barriers in terms of lack of awareness around how gender-based abuse impacts on disabled people. I think a lot of organisations that were domestic abuse organisations weren't aware of issues around disability, and organisations working with blind and partially sighted people didn't have an awareness of issues around domestic abuse. The other difficulty I had was that every time I went back, I was told, well, we told you that you wouldn't amount to anything without us, and you've proved us right. And particularly the second time, you know, I was told that you've proved us right on two occasions. And I think that was quite difficult to process and to deal with. But, you know, on the other side of that, it also made me more determined to want to prove them wrong.
And how did you feel after you left, in those initial first days and weeks, and maybe did you notice a difference in that final successful attempt versus the first two times?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the third time I left, I moved into university accommodation. And I remember I had a small room with a small ensuite bathroom, and I just felt so liberated. I remember reading a blog once from another survivor who described the freedom as a holiday. And that's what it felt like. It felt like a holiday to be able to have those choices over the most simple aspects of my life, you know, like what time I go to bed, phone calls I make, just not to be under that constant monitoring was extremely, extremely liberating. And, you know, those small freedoms I don't take for granted now.
What other, I guess, support, were there any particular services or perhaps people that supported you during that time?
Definitely. I mean, I had people around me and friends and staff at the university. They were all very supportive. And I think my campaigning, actually, that I started then to look into what I experienced more, and I started reading about other people's experiences of honour abuse when I realised that I want to, you know, campaign around this, because I didn't see anything about disabled people. And so it was that campaigning and that activism that was the healing medicine for me, actually.
And looking back, how did this experience impact on your cultural identity?
I'm very clear that what I experienced had no cultural or religious basis. You know, abuse is abuse. And for me, you know, I still hold on to my identity. You know, I'm a South Asian woman, and I'm proud of that. And there are many aspects of my culture that I maintain. But what I experience and what so many people experience has no place in my culture.
And can you tell me a little bit more about your campaigning? Obviously, it's a really big drive for you at the moment. And what would you like to see happen going forward when it comes to survivors of abuse who are, like yourself, living with disability?
I would like to see more awareness. You know, we said disabled people are 3 times more likely to experience domestic abuse compared to non-disabled people. And that, you know, that's really high. I would like to see more accessible refuge accommodation and more training, really, for professionals and more platforms like this where survivors are given a voice and are able to share their experiences and their stories.
And if someone who is perhaps experiencing abuse right now, and they're listening to this conversation, listening to your story, is there anything you would like to say to them?
I would say that there is help available out there and that you do not have to suffer alone. Reach out to your local sight loss service or domestic abuse service and speak to someone. There is light at the end of the tunnel and there is life after abuse. And for the victims and survivors out there, our communities, society, our family may say we brought shame, but their shame is our honor, and that's what we hold on to every single day.
Any advice you feel is really important to share when it comes to ensuring the safety of someone who wants to leave an abusive situation, or perhaps just something that would maybe really support them in that decision?
My advice to professionals working with disabled victims and survivors of abuse is to believe the victim and survivor and to take seriously what they've said. So, you know, I've had many professionals that have been supportive and that have believed me, but there've also been those that thought that I might be overreacting. There is a misconception sometimes that carers or those who are supporting disabled people always have their best interests at heart, but that is not always the case. There are many circumstances where that is the case, absolutely, but there are also those victims and survivors who are experiencing abuse from those who are supposed to care for them. So I think it's really important to listen to the victim and survivor and to hear what they've got to say.
How has your life changed since you have left the abusive situation? And I imagine it's positive.
Yeah, I mean, since I left, I went to university 3 times over. I have a job that I love, and I am living a life of independence and choice. I can say that I am living the life that I've always dreamed of.
Well, I'm so glad to hear this and really appreciate you sharing your story with us today, Celia.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
If you've been affected by any of the information discussed in this interview, help and support is available. If you are in immediate danger, please call 999 and ask for the police. And if you're not in immediate danger, please call one of the following helplines. In England, free phone 0808 2000 247. In Northern Ireland, free phone 0808 802 1414. In Wales, free phone 0808 8010 800. And in Scotland, free phone 0800 027 1234.